Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you in part by OffraingTree. When you're a yoga teacher and you're trying to build your digital presence, it can be daunting. First, you might need a website. There are a lot of great tools for building websites like WordPress, Wix, and Squarespace. Then you need a way to email your students. Again, there are tools for that, like MailChimp and Constant Contact, but that's another account to pay for and a password to remember. Then you need a way to schedule and register your students. Again, there are tools for that, but it's another account to create and pay for and another password to remember. Oh wait, how do I integrate my scheduling tool with my website? If you're going crazy, I totally get that. So instead of putting all of this stuff off for another day because it's too daunting, let me tell you about a better way. OfferingTree set out to make creating your digital presence fun, easy, and affordable. With one account, you can create a website in minutes that has your schedule built right in. They also have email marketing tools to collect email addresses, send newsletters, and automated emails to your subscribers. It all works seamlessly together with one account and one subscription. To learn more about what OfferingTree can do for your digital presence, visit offeringtree.com/MBOM. OfferingTree has been supporting MBOM for over a year now, and I not only love the product and service that they've created, but I also love the people. I'm a big fan of supporting small businesses because I'm a small business myself. Small businesses supporting other small businesses is probably one of my favorite things ever, and it's really cool when I get to hop on a partner meeting and I get to talk with the co-founders of this product. As well, OfferingTree is providing special pricing for MBOM listeners, so be sure to head over and visit offeringtree.com/MBOM to receive your discount. Once again, offeringtree.com/MBOM. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you in part by Fave Yogis. The Fave Yogis app is back with new features for teachers that let you create and manage your own private classes while making payment and registration a breeze. Do you have regular private clients? Make life easier with AutoPay. Forget about remembering to Venmo or, if you're Canadian, try some sort of e-transfer or PayPal combination. You can use AutoPay to enable repeat payments and keep calendars in sync with classes. Google Calendar integration automatically updates teachers and student classes when you make changes. It's still just your yoga, teachers add classes, students add teachers, and teachers and students stay connected. So head on over to the App Store on your device and find Fave Yogis. It's FAVYOGIS. On top of that, it's totally free to download and give a try. So head on over to your App Store and find Fave Yogis, FAVYOGIS. Oh, and make sure you use code MBOM, MBOM, and let them know that I sent you. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the MBOM podcast. Today on the podcast, I am super excited to be joined by Noelle Cordeau. She's the co-founder of a coaching startup called Journey, spelled J-R-N-I. And on this episode of the podcast, Noelle and I really dive into the business of life coaching. We start a little bit with her journey becoming a life coach, what inspired her to start her own business journey to train other life coaches. We talk about trends in the wellness economy and wellness industry, what they mean for yoga teachers. We talk about how life coaching can help yoga teachers, both from the professional side of things and also on the personal side of things. And we also talk a lot about, you know, the business of life coaching, which parallels really well to the business of yoga. So how you can formalize your skill set, start to get paid, and some of Noelle's top business lessons. So this is a really, really awesome episode, whether or not you are actually interested in life coaching. Before we dive into the episode, I just wanted to chat a little bit about the private Facebook community. So a lot of you have heard me mention it. It's called Yoga Business Badasses. And of course, it's on the Facebook platform. And it is a hidden group. It's open to everyone who wants to come in, but it is hidden and private. So you do have to search for it in the search bar. So if you just search Yoga Business Badasses, it'll show up. There's a couple of questions to answer to get in. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it today is because something that I've been doing as part of my 2020 resolutions is getting on camera a little bit more. So I have started doing weekly lives talking about the podcast episodes. And my vision for these is to be able to have conversations about the podcast episodes. So the lives are on Wednesday afternoons, and so it gives you a chance to listen to the episodes. And I'd love to hear what questions you have, what comments you have, what things were most impactful for you from the episodes. And part of the reason why I wanted to do this is that sometimes it's really hard as busy yoga teachers, as entrepreneurs, you know, maybe as parents or people with other jobs, you know, an hour is a lot of your time. And so I wanted to have these conversations about the podcast in 10 to 15 minutes. So even if you didn't get a chance to listen to the episode, this might be a really great way to get the like TLDR, too long didn't read version of the podcast. And what I've been doing for these videos is sharing my top business lessons from the episode. Every episode I record, I learn so much from the guests that I have on the podcast, and it is so fun to be able to just recap that with you guys and to be able to talk about that. So if you are interested in having more of a community and being able to have a little bit more one-on-one conversation about these episodes, I'd love for you to join the Facebook community. So once again, it's Yoga Business Badasses. Just find it in the search bar and we'll let you on in. All right, now on to the episode with Noelle Cordeau from Journey. Here she is. Noelle, welcome to the podcast today. I'm super excited to have you here with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to chat with you and for all the stuff that we're going to dive into, but I want to start a little bit with your, you know, about you, yourself, and your journey. Can you tell me a little bit about you, what you do, and your journey becoming a life coach?
Absolutely. So I'll start at the present. I am an accidental CEO. Mm-hmm. I have been at the helm of Journey Coaching as the lead trainer for the Catalyst Life Coaching Intensive now for 3 years. And becoming a CEO was never part of my life's plan. Founding a coach training program was never part of my life's plan. It happened really organically, and it grew out of a need to serve people who want to transition into the wellness space. So how did I get here? It starts way back in early childhood, probably around age 7 to 11 is when I can first remember feelings that I now recognize as being associated with depression, body dysmorphia, and the beginning roots of eating disorders. And I suffered with depression and eating disorders through my teens, really gnarly in high school. College was even worse. And then found myself in my early 20s, really struggling to find my way out of what could be described as an environment of dark gray. And I was in a very unhealthy marriage at the time. I was super young. I didn't really understand myself in context or the world in context, and I began searching for something that would help me dig out. I very successfully went through years and years of therapy, but therapy never really got me to the place where I felt like I had concrete action steps to cultivate confidence and happiness. And that's when I discovered the science of applied positive psychology, which for many is the foundation of a coaching practice, and that's how I teach and train. And the fact that there was an actual science associated with happiness, being happy, staying happy, and experiencing deep connection and contentment in life blew my mind. And I wanted to help other women dig out. So without having my own life in order, I just kind of got on the path and said, I know there's work we can do here. I started with body image. I started with confidence. I started around weight loss and fitness, and I built a small practice. I went through coach certification. I became more and more intellectually interested in the craft. I began to grow. I got divorced. I went through years of self-discovery. I applied to graduate school. I undertook a triple degree program, 2 masters and a PhD, founded my company. Thank you. I founded my company along the way with my co-founder, John, who's a dear friend of mine. And
what ended up happening was the company just kind of took off, and I reached a decision point that I never thought I'd ever be at in my entire life, of being in a PhD and having the option to become a CEO, and I had to choose. And I jumped, I took the leap, I took the CEO route, and I've been here ever since.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing the Coles Notes version, I'm sure,
yeah.
of that journey. What was the time frame on that, just for context? I know you started in childhood with having, depression, eating disorder type stuff, body image stuff, but what was the time frame in terms of more of your career?
Yeah, so I got divorced when I was 29. And that was really the pivotal point for me, because up until that time, I really saw myself as someone who didn't have a strong set of, mental capacities. I saw myself as being subject to depression and eating disorders, and I didn't think I'd be able to make much of myself. And then when my whole life crumbled, I had to. And I was really lucky to have some great mentors. So I don't think I got serious about what I was going to do personally and professionally until I was 32. And then between age 32 and 36, I got to work. So really, in a brief span of 4 years, I turned my whole life around, and then I became a CEO at age 36.
Wow, that's incredible. And so what were your degrees in? Were you studying, were you studying to become a life coach at that point? Or was that kind of you studied something else and then life coach was the career that came from that?
Life coaching was actually my focus and the first work that I undertook. So when I was really learning about applied positive psychology, and I'll toss quantum physics in there too, that was pretty life-changing. I was self-studying. I was reading and reading and reading. And that's when I discovered that the field of coaching existed. And at that time, almost 10 years ago, it was really emerging. There was a body of research that was still developing. The coaching hadn't really entered into the public's consciousness. So I searched far and wide for a coaching certification that I felt good about. And I did go to graduate school for executive and professional coaching and organizational development. And that's where I began. That, in hindsight, was truly a gift, because as I continued with research and graduate work, the lens of coaching and the lens of applied positive psychology really informed my work against the medical model in ways that I never could have predicted. So I did coach training first, certification first, and then I went on the triple degree program, was an MSW, which I halted because I did not want to become a licensed therapist, and then an MED, Masters of Education, and then my PhD is human sexuality, and that's where I've been working on objectification theory, the colonized mind, and body image recovery post-eating disorders and sexual trauma for women.
Wow, there's a lot in there. I mean, it's definitely not just one thing. I was like, quantum physics, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I think it's amazing though. It's such a beautiful thing to hear, from somebody who's clearly a lifelong learner and has a lot of passions. I think that's what we're meant to do as humans. So it's really cool to hear that you followed a bunch of those different paths and just learned what was interesting to you while also still obviously creating a really beautiful career for yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so were you already working as a life coach when you and John founded Journey, or kind of how did that happen?
I was working as a life coach with a small regional practice when we founded Journey. And the reason that we founded Journey was we wanted to build the company that we wished existed when we started out. It's really hard to make it as a solo practitioner, I'm sure as you know, whether you're focused in yoga or life coaching or any of the other wellness modalities. And so we found that the perfect combination is evidence-based credentialing, community of like-minded individuals, and professional support for all of those questions that you never know you're going to need to ask.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so for people listening, in case they're not familiar with Journey and also life coaching, can you tell me, I guess, one, what Journey is, what you guys do, and then two, also, what defines life coaching, I guess? Because I think that coaching is this very, I don't know, you hear coaching a lot, like, hey, I can coach you on something, but it goes from everything from sports to business to life. And I'd love to hear kind of how you guys define life coaching.
Absolutely. So Journey is a collective of coaches. And within that collective, some people define themselves as life coaches. Some people define themselves by niche specialization, like divorce recovery or weight loss or career. And within Journey Coaching, we have our certification program, which is the Catalyst Life Coaching Intensive. It's a 20-week program, evidence-based, graduate level, with ICF accredited credentialing for coaches. Beyond that, you're absolutely right that the field of coaching is a really broad umbrella. And you're absolutely right that it fits into many different categories. So, as you said, athletics, business, consulting kind of fits in there a little bit. Then you hop over to health coaching. And then life coaching is kind of the umbrella for everything else. But as far as coaching goes, the tenets of it should be relatively similar across all of the different thresholds because coaching is a client-directed process. So a lot of the theoretical roots did come from sports psychology. And if you think about a baseball coach, that coach is integral to getting the top athletes to perform at their peak and for educating and motivating the team to work together through congruency. So if you're saying, wow, you know, that coach is really effective for getting really talented people to perform, that's exactly the lens you want to apply to all of the different facets and niche areas of coaching. And then when we're looking directly at life coaching, imagine what you could do if you had somebody like a baseball coach on your shoulder, in your ear, helping you quarterback your life.
Awesome. I love that. I think that that's really cool. And thank you for defining that. And I guess one of the things that I'm curious about is, you know, how does life coaching kind of play into the world of wellness? And I know that you talked a little bit about, you know, how it's played into your personal journey, but in general, you know, with the people that you work with, how does life coaching kind of, I guess, one, help people within the wellness industry, but then also, you know, how can wellness professionals start to add life coaching as like their packages and services?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think step one is to understand the placement of the wellness market juxtaposed to the medical model. So the medical model that everybody's familiar with is medicine, therapy, the land of insurance, and that is a very structured, rule-bound, disease-based system that looks at diagnosing a problem once the problem occurs, and then levying tools and techniques to fix that problem. And licensed professionals, therapists, doctors, nutritionists, so on and so forth, typically house that field. The wellness market sits adjacent to it. The wellness market doesn't look at life from a disease-based perspective, but more from a foundational, holistic, looking at the body and mind as an ecosystem, strengths-based, what is, what's working. We're not looking at individuals saying, we need to fix you. Rather, that consumer that's driving the market is saying, I don't want to wait for there to be a problem. I want to take charge of my life. I want to put things in place so that I feel better every day. And it's a much more holistic approach. And in many ways, it's undefined. So the field of wellness and modalities like coaching are probably where therapy was 50 or 60 years ago. Even though a lot of the tenets are ancient, the public's consciousness really hasn't wrapped its head around this field in terms of the actual chops that it has. And I know you had another question in there.
Yeah, I really asked you two very separate questions. So I was like, thanks for rolling with that. that definitely makes sense. Just to touch on that response. I really love, like, I'm just very big as a yoga teacher. I'm very big on like the entire wellness space and the idea of more holistic living. And something that I've found personally quite frustrating over the last couple of years is like, I feel like every time I go to the doctor, it's like, oh, let me just write you a prescription for something. And I'm like, but I don't need antibiotics. Like, you know, maybe sometimes I do if I have like strep throat or something like that, but that's usually not, you know, why I go to the doctor. And it's actually interesting because I was working with a naturopath to help with some hormone and digestive stuff. And I had cut out red meat from my diet. My doctor was like, oh, well, we better add iron to your blood test then. He was like quite concerned for me. And I don't know. I just feel like Western medicine is so great. It saves so many lives and it does so much for our society, but I really, you know, would like it to be a little bit more holistic and you know, if doctors could work a little bit more holistically. And I know that's a stereotype because some do, but in general, that's been my experience.
Some do. And I think you're touching on something really important. So if we're defining wellness and the wellness economy, it composes physical, which we share with the medical space, but it also touches on emotional, spiritual, intellectual, and environmental well-being. And so when we're trying to flesh out, you know, exactly where the gray and missing spaces are in the medical model, I think it's in the emotional, spiritual, intellectual, and environmental spaces, which is really how life coaching can link a lot of the different trends and modalities available in the wellness space to each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think too, you know, thinking right alongside with life coaching, I feel like it goes really hand in hand with yoga. I mean, lots of doctors are starting to kind of, you know, start to prescribe yoga as something that, you know, maybe somebody should try if they're having like pain or if they're working with some sort of challenges physically or mentally, which is really cool. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to a point where it's not just that therapy is recommended, but it's also maybe life coaching gets recommended as well.
Therapy, life coaching, yoga, movement, complete, you know, body self integration. I think it's worthwhile to note that coaching and therapy tend to exist on the same continuum. So therapy is a absolutely wonderful modality in the medical model. And therapy will take someone from a position of psychological anguish to a position of baseline. And then coaching picks up where someone is reasonably well, they're getting out of bed every day, they're not experiencing psychological anguish, and moves them to a position of flourishing. That's the verbal mental piece. And then where yoga picks up is the somatic piece, the body, the mind, the movement, relaxation, just being in touch with your breathing, how you feel, how your body moves and works. And so many people are just disconnected from all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even as a yoga teacher and practitioner and somebody who meditates and journals regularly and, you know, has worked with coaches and stuff, sometimes I feel like I'm disconnected and I feel like I'm doing so much of the things. It's hard sometimes. I mean, we're constantly stimulated. We have a million notifications going off all the time. We see a million ads throughout the day. And it is like it's work to be present in life, I think, at least.
It is work to be present in life. And one of the things that I love about coaching and really specifically about coach training is connecting the dots between all of the ancient philosophies that drive the wellness space and the science that can enable us to understand it in context. So just, you know, two great examples from our conversation so far. When you asked about quantum physics, the science of quantum physics can be readily used to explain why manifesting works. And then secondarily, if we're thinking about phones and digital detoxing, we need to understand the role that dopamine plays in our brains and bodies in order to understand why this is addictive, what specifically is happening chemically in my brain and body, and why does my phone feel like it needs to be attached to me all the time?
Mm, that's so interesting. Is there like a short form answer for why we feel like that? Like why we feel like we have to have our phones all the time?
Yeah. So dopamine, dopamine's wonderful. Dopamine is a fantastic hormone. And, you know, dopamine produces this feeling of happiness, of connection, of, ooh, you know, someone likes me. This is great. So every facet of technology, whether it's email, text, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, all of it, every time you get an email, a notification, a text, something that dings, essentially, you get a hit of dopamine, which is so great, except that it's not followed with the traditional serotonin regulator that would take place in everyday one-on-one exchange. That serotonin regulator gives you the follow-through of contentment. Like, yes, this piece of social engagement was actually satisfying to my brain and body. So with the constant little hits of dopamine, we have an incomplete process. That's why people feel like they are stuck in this rapt sense of anticipation for the next hit. One text message is not going to cut it. How many Facebook likes did I get? How many people acknowledged my post on Instagram? We're creating this mental currency that gives us these pinpoints of validation without ever getting the serotonin regulator.
Wow, that's so interesting. And it's so interesting, like I can totally relate to that feeling, but to know that there's actually like science behind that in terms of how our brains work is really fascinating. I know I need to give you the second part of that question, but before I get there, I'm curious about, like, you know, as business owners and entrepreneurs, is there a way for us to, like, you know, use social media to our advantage without, like, is there a way to manage that? Like, oh, I need more likes. Like, is it just being conscious with that and knowing that that's something that's going to happen? Or is there anything else we can do to kind of manage that and still use it for our businesses?
Yeah, the philosophy that I employ and the way that we teach at the Catalyst Intensive is that awareness is the key to everything. So, you know, now that I've explained to you the role of dopamine in your brain and body, the next time you get a text message or a notification, you can say to yourself, ha, that's dopamine. This is what it feels like. Let me be aware of it and just start minimizing and mitigating your screen time. When you're having that sense of unease, anticipation, notice where it lives in your body. Is it your throat, your chest, your stomach, your neck? That can give you clues perhaps to what chakra needs some attention. And then kind of take it on a follow through from there of like, what's really happening? Is this a need or is this a need for validation?
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a great tip. I love that. I'm definitely going to start practicing that within my own business because I can 100% relate to, I guess, not thinking consciously about like, oh, a hit of dopamine. So I'll switch that up. But thinking about like, oh, somebody messaged me, like, that's nice. Which it is. It's nice to hear from like friends and family and stuff like that. But the lines definitely become a bit blurrier when it's like, oh, work email. Somebody needs something from me.
Yeah, somebody needs something from me. Or, you know, as entrepreneurs use social media to wield visibility, the awareness that this phenomenon has the potential to become addictive should be at the fore, so that you're guarding yourself mentally and saying, okay, you know, and this sounds, you know, kind of gnarly, but I'm not really that special. I'm using social media as a tool for visibility, and I need to attach to my humanity and purpose in order to navigate this weird world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that.
Hey, yogis. We're just taking a quick little break from the podcast to talk about Punch Pass. Are you looking for inspiration as we begin the new year? Today, I want to tell you why studios around the world love Punch Pass studio management software. Charlotte has found that selling her passes online through Punch Pass has helped her cash flow endlessly. And online pre-registration has meant that she always knows how many clients will show up for class. Dan says simply that Punch Pass is just so easy for people, and it makes him and his business look incredibly professional. Marquita says that the team at Punch Pass was attentive to her, which she really appreciated. She says that if she had a question, it was going to get answered. Laura introduced PunchPass's memberships so she can automatically collect payment from her clients. She has been amazed at how much energy, excitement, and growth her business has experienced as a result. Amanda was totally overwhelmed with the other software that she was using. She needed something more simple, and she could see that PunchPass seemed to get it. She found it quick and easy to move from one software into another, into PunchPass, and she loves how PunchPass provides her with usable information at her fingertips. Head on over to punchpass.com/MBOM to read more stories about people who have transformed their businesses with PunchPass. And you are invited to try PunchPass for free for 2 weeks and see for yourself how it might work for you. Once again, it's punchpass.com/MBOM. Okay, back to the episode.
Okay, second question that I asked in that crazy long part question was, with I feel like life coaching and yoga go hand in hand, which we've just talked about, you know, quite clearly, I think. I'm curious, how can life coaching kind of, I guess, play in with yoga teachers to help them with their businesses, help them make more money? I guess both from the side of like how yoga teachers themselves can use life coaching, but then also how they can maybe become life coaches to help their students further and then also help their businesses.
Yeah. So we train a lot of yoga teachers and it's a really beautiful marriage. So first up, there's a diversification in the services that you can offer. So you have the same population coming to see you at your studio and you can sell to them twice. That's great. That's a 50% increase right there. Secondarily, when we're really looking at the integration of the self and the full body perspective, what I've heard from yoga teachers specifically is that they often feel at a loss when certain poses or life scenarios really crack their clients open and someone is hanging around the studio afterwards weeping and they really want to help this person but don't know where to go, don't have the frameworks or the verbal tools to put in place to say, okay, let's follow this through into your everyday life.
Right. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, something that's talked a lot about in yoga teacher trainings is sticking within our scope of practice, which I do think is really important. And that goes from everything from like, you know, maybe not touching people if you don't have that in your scope of practice to not acting like you're something more for them than you can be. And I think that that example certainly falls into that. You know, somebody has this really powerful experience and all of a sudden they kind of almost treat you like you're, you know, a therapist or a coach for them. And it is really challenging, especially when you come from a place of like, you want to support them, but at the same time, people go through like heavy stuff in life. And it's like, it's hard to carry the weight of that if you don't know or don't have like the tools in your toolbox to actually support them in a way other than just being like, you know, I guess a friend essentially.
Yes. And I'm really glad that she talked about what it feels like to be at a loss. That is your intuition letting you know that there's a firm boundary there. And whether you are a coach who has been trained through certification or whether you're somebody who's just really, you know, thinking about joining the field, that will remain true. I was just having this conversation yesterday with one of my coaches who hit up against an issue in coaching where the client needs to be referred out to medical treatment. And she said, I just felt at a loss. I just felt like I didn't know where to go. So whether you're working as a coach or you're not yet working as a coach, that's going to be a great signal to you to stop, drop, ask questions, seek mentorship, and probably possibly refer out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a really good piece of advice. And I think, you know, that's everything that I've been taught in yoga teacher training as well, is like, make sure that you're very clear with them, like what your expertise is, and then have, you know, a number of people kind of on hand that can, you know, be like the physiotherapist. Like there's a lot of physical things that are not in the scope of practice for a yoga teacher. And we have to be really cautious about like, we can't fix everything. So, you know, physical therapist or physiotherapist, I'm Canadian, so we say physio. and then also I think having, you know, a therapist or a life coach, if that's not something that you can do. If somebody's looking to offer life coaching, what are sort of the steps to pursuing that as something that can become a part of your business or your offerings, or just something that you feel more comfortable in being like, hey, I'm actually a certified life coach. Like, why don't we go grab coffee and we can talk about this more type thing?
Yeah. So, you know, if you're thinking about moving into this field, it takes a couple of things: courage, confidence, and certification. So courage, number one, because you're working in an emerging field. You're going to be one of the first folks in modern times to step up and say, yeah, you know, this is who I am. I want to work as a coach. And you're going to be sharing your story and you're going to be creating ripples. So that takes bravery right out of the gate. Confidence to throw down and say, yeah, I have it in me to hold space for people from a complete stance of non-judgment. And I'm able to do this work because I can deal with somebody's internal life. And then certification, I feel is very important. Coaching is an evidence-based field. There is a large body of science that supports the interventions that take place during a coaching session. And it's really protective for a practitioner to go through some kind of coach training so that you can rely on the techniques to support you in session and you're not just floundering around in the dark feeling like you have to show up and provide and, you know, serve value.
Okay. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And so if people are looking to get certified or are already offering some sort of coaching, how can you like formalize your skill set and then I guess start getting paid from there?
Yeah. So the field of coaching is deep and wide and there are so many great training programs out there and there are so many different theoretical touchstones that you can work from. So for example, I work as a feminist coach through the lens of applied positive psychology and neurobiology. So I took the time to really get my credentials in order. I learned about brains. I learned about applied positive psychology. Now, of course, I'm unique in the level of education that I've achieved as a coach. So a really solid primer on a handful of techniques that you feel like you like and can rely on that are evidence-based, I think would be, you know, the starting point, the foundation. And the cool thing about evidence-based techniques is that if you don't want to share your own story and be a public person with what you've gone through, you can always say, you know, this is the technique that I work with and hang your hat on that, you know, specific kind of intervention. If you are just getting started working as a coach or you're already certified and you want to start, you know, going through this process, I would take a look at the price points in your area for similar services, Reiki healing, massage therapy, facials, one-on-one work, and then price accordingly. And we can talk about all of the different ways to source clients too.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be awesome. Okay, so just to touch on the pricing, so it is very, very much like looking kind of at what similar modalities in your area are. So there isn't kind of like standardized pricing for this type of thing.
Coaches tend to raise their prices based on experience. When okay. I first started out, I found $60 to be the sweet spot. And again, this was 10 years ago. So $60 for me was awesome for getting clients, gaining experience, really feeling like I was delivering value, understanding who I was as a coach, understanding the population that I wanted to work with, understanding the population that I was good at working with. I had some false starts there. I didn't like executive coaching at all. And then once I moved into working with women as a feminist coach, that's when I really hit my stride. And then, you know, as you learn and grow, it depends on what you want to do. Do you want to offer packages? Do you want to offer group coaching? Do you want to offer online courses? Do you want to offer virtual coaching in person? It goes on and on and on.
Okay. Yeah, no, all of that makes sense. And there's definitely a lot of similarities between, I guess, the business of life coaching, I think, and also the business of yoga, which is really cool. So definitely sounds like a good pair for yoga teachers. And so if somebody is looking to do this, you know, how do they start getting clients? How do you start getting yourself out there?
It's a long-term process. And I think that's probably the first thing to remember. So at Journey, we look at it as really two phases. So phase one is learn how to coach, learn what to do ethically when you have a human or a group of humans in front of you and gain comfort and competence with the techniques and interventions. That means practicing and practicing and even more practice. Simultaneously, phase two is doing the work of understanding what it means to run a business, understanding what would be required of you with, you know, taxes and advertising and structure and process flow. And the process of building a business will take the rest of your life. So there's really no race. It's equally important to be a good coach as it is to have your practice set up properly. So I'd say it's a marathon, not a sprint, and take your time with it all.
I love that tip. As I think that it can get really overwhelming when you think about all the different things that you should do to get your business running. But yeah, I love that. I think that it's important to remember that you're going to, you know, do it for a while and that you're going to learn and grow as you go. So you don't have to have it all figured out. Are there any major business lessons that you've learned from creating your business that would be helpful for listeners to hear today?
Yes. So when I started, I was really overwhelmed with the entire idea of an online presence and a virtual presence and putting myself out there. And so I didn't. I built a regional practice that was largely based on strategic partnerships and word of mouth. And I think that when you're thinking about coaching, it's really easy to look at what's accessible to you, which is basically going to be targeted Facebook ads, Instagram, you know, all of the folks that you're going to start to see housing a virtual practice and say, wow, this is the way that I must do it. But there's actually a lot of really sane options to move forward. So just an example is starting with something I do with my coaches is a regional geography scan to make a list of every single outlet that offers some form of wellness products or services in your geographic area, and then checking to see if they offer life coaching. And if they don't, reaching out to whoever is the manager of the service providers and saying, hey, have you ever considered adding life coaching to your menu? Most of the time, folks who run and own these facilities are looking for ways to diversify their offerings to the same consumers. So adding a life coach to a staff is a really easy option. You don't require any overhead. You can do it in person. You can set your own schedule. Same deal if you're offering workshops or presentations or giving talks, which is how I got started, giving talks on positive psychology and confidence to anyone who would listen to me. I then built a virtual practice based on word of mouth.
Okay, cool. And what type of businesses should people be looking for? Like what businesses are usually open to adding life coaching?
It could be anything. It could be a CrossFit box. It could be a spa or med spa. It could be a nutritionist's office, a doctor's office. I gave talks to women's cancer support groups. I gave talks at Toastmasters, university campuses. Student life is always looking to bring in new and interesting speakers. Keep an eye towards the population that you want to serve and think about where they show up online and in life and then get in front of them.
Okay. Yeah. I love that tip. And then, so you mentioned that you started kind of more regional and then, you know, took your business online from there. Can you tell me a little bit about like what that shift was like from going from, you know, a regional in-person practice to being like more of an online practice?
It was bananas. And I, looking back, I wish that I had a little bit more intention behind it. But John and I joke that we swam too far too fast and then, you know, we're past the point of no return. So when I was starting out, I didn't fully understand the impact of reach. And I wrote a couple blog pieces about recovering from eating disorders and life on the other side that had a really nice reach, not quite viral, but those two articles alone were enough to propel me into the virtual space as a voice and a presence and launched my online career in terms of visibility. And I've struggled with it a lot. At this point, I'm very Googleable, I'm very searchable, and that takes curation and intention, how you want to show up in the world, what you want folks to know about you. So because I like to be more of a private person, I tend to hang my hat on my business and the science and the work that I do. And I've pulled further away from my story beyond the cliff notes.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like this is a really common trend that I hear from, you know, people that I work with. So like yoga teachers that I work with one-on-one, one of the most common questions I think I get asked is, you know, do I have to be online? Which is always an interesting question to me because I've never had those like reserves about being online. But I like how you're talking about, you know, hanging your hat on more of your professional side of things. And you don't necessarily need to disclose a ton about your personal life in order to have a successful business. At least I think that's what I'm hearing you say. Is that right?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, my story is interesting and I could go into it for days, but the science is even better than my story. And the science is what excites me. So if your story excites you, lean into that. If you find something else that lights your brain on fire, lean into that. The most important piece is authentic passion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that. And yeah, I feel like I sort of sit in the middle, probably definitely more on the side of like a little bit more conservative personally. And it's always amazing to me when I like follow somebody who shares like so many details about their life, because it's just never something that's really like lit me up. But I think that there's ways that you can connect with people and connect with your target audience without having to tell them like, you know, the contents of your journal type thing. And I think that people are fine with that. At least I think that's sort of been my experience. I don't necessarily really have all the answers or know, but yeah, I love what you're talking about. I think that we really need to like kind of, you know, trust what feels good to us and go with that, because it shouldn't feel uncomfortable in that way as we're putting ourselves out there, I guess.
Yeah. And it'll change. I mean, that's the nice piece about working in wellness is, you know, we are all going to change and evolve as unique beings over the course of our lifespan. So, you know, the way that I present myself now as a seasoned CEO in the wellness space is very different in terms of tone, tenor, confidence, sharing than I did when I was 29 years old, newly divorced, just starting out and really unsure of myself in the world.
Yes, absolutely. I think too, it's like easy to get caught up in this, like I need to plan out, you know, what my business is going to look like 10 years from now. And sure, you can have like goals and stuff, but I feel like that's a perfect example of like, you know, you're just doing what you know in the moment and things are going to shift as you grow. Like your business is going to change as you personally grow, especially as, you know, an entrepreneur or like a solo entrepreneur. And I think this is something that also I hear a lot from yoga teachers is like, how do I figure out who I want to serve? And it's like, just follow kind of what you're interested in now and know that it's okay if that's not the same person that you're interested in working with in 10 years. It's totally fine.
Yeah. And I think too, you should expect that shift to occur. You'll end up with an umbrella of niche interests. And there are some things that will just fall by the wayside for you that you were once really good at and enjoyed. And there are other things that'll seep in as new interests.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. And so we touched a little bit on some of the business lessons you learned. Are there any other kind of top tips for wellness professionals who want to start offering coaching in their businesses that you have?
Yes, I would take the time to really dig into the wellness space as a whole, because when you start to see the wellness space as this, you know, overflowing basket of abundance, there's a seat at the table for everyone. The emerging middle class consumer is really driving this market. People are hungry for change. They're hungry for control over their lives. And it's really effective to build confidence by understanding that you are moving into a colossal industry that generates $4.2 trillion annually. That's roughly 5.3% of the entire global economic output. It's massive. So understanding that you may be an individual, but you are part of a gorgeous, huge, awesome, living, breathing field that is changing the world. So much so, the UN designated two tenets, neuroplasticity and movement, specifically yoga focused, as some of the top goals for sustainable development in 2019.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. That number is way bigger than I ever would have guessed that it was in terms of how much is generated by the wellness industry. But yeah, it is a reminder that it is a massive, massive space. So kind of looking at that, and then, you know, are there any other tips of how to get started from there? Obviously looking into a certification.
Yep. Looking into a certification and, It also really helps to understand that coaching is a client-directed process. So one of the biggest misconceptions about coaching is that you're going to be giving people advice. That's actually an unethical practice in the space of coaching. What you're going to be doing instead is holding space for someone to dump all of their life Legos out, and then you're going to strategically partner with them, ask questions, and help your client come to their own conclusions. And that is a really comfortable place to be. If you're already good at working with people, you're already good at non-judgment, you're already good at holding space. It's just adding a layer of skill to what you already know.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that that's such an important thing to clarify, because I do think that there is this sort of like, I don't know, misconception, I guess, for some people that it's like, oh, okay, what if I don't have any advice to give? And yeah, I think that it's so important to be able to hold space for people, for them to be able to talk about what's going on. And then it's so much more powerful to be able to figure out, feel like you figured out a solution yourself, as opposed to just have somebody tell you what to do.
Oh, yeah. And think about how you respond. Just take, you know, someone who's close to you in your life and you go to them with a problem, and instead of being met with empathy, you're met with, what you really should do is...
I feel like it's like every mom out there.
Yeah.
They're trying their best, right?
Mm-hmm. So hard.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I love that. One other thing I'm curious about that is a bit of, I don't want to say a problem because it's not really a problem, but just a challenge in, I guess, the yoga space that I experience is this idea of, you know, running more of a spiritual business and struggling with the idea of charging for your services and feeling like your services are worth something. I guess kind of two-part question, like, one, is that something that you've seen in the life coaching industry? And then two, also, how do we start just making sure that we're really valuing ourselves, our skills, and our services?
Yeah, that's a journey. It's a complete journey. And, you know, I look at it from a couple different directions. So, as I said, you know, plug into the wellness industry as a whole. Understand that your work has incredible value. So number one, as a practitioner, you're driving economic growth. Number two, your work improves public health. Number three, your work serves the protection of natural and cultural assets. Number four, it supports workforce development and worker welfare. And then number five, it enhances quality of life and social capital. And then I look at it from a feminist lens of saying, okay, well, the majority of wellness consumers are women and wellness-related companies are traditionally female-dominated. It seems like that is also true of the yoga space. So when we're talking about worth, to what degree does the colonized mind play into that? Are you allowed to ask for money? Are you allowed to stand in your power? What voices and naysayers have you bumped up against that are saying, you know, this isn't for you? And as that relates to, you know, a spiritual practice and giving, everybody needs to eat. You need to be whole and financially compensated and material whole so that you can provide the spiritual service to others. And again, it's not just the individual consumer. You are having a global impact.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff in there. And to be able to like turn around and stand in your power to offer, you know, what you think that you're worth and to be able to receive that. Like, it feels really good when you're a business owner to be able to support yourself. And I feel like that's, at least for me, part of like the fire that kind of ignites me to keep going is to be able to feel like, okay, I'm really providing value for something. And in exchange, I can support myself with that.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. And so in order to do the work that you need to do and to provide the spiritual practice, you need to put your own oxygen mask on first, and the consumer will follow. It's hard to ask for money. I went through my own journey with it, and I still, every time I say my rates, I kind of, you know, gasp a little bit, but I'm worth every penny, and my clients know that, and they're happy to pay for the experience.
Right. So just an ongoing process. As a as a life coach, you know, if you were working with somebody on, I guess, the money side of things, do you have any top tips for somebody who's really been struggling with their own worth? I mean, obviously, like hiring somebody to help you with that could be a great one, but are there any other tips that you might provide somebody in that case?
Yeah, everybody is so unique in their own ecosystem. And this is a really great example of why coaches shouldn't and don't give advice is, you know, if I'm talking to you or I'm talking to another individual, just at face value, without asking questions and understanding your personal money story, I can't offer advice. I have absolutely no idea what your lived existence has been like. And so, you know, step one is getting clear on what your lived existence has been like. What's your money story? What have you come to believe about money that you'd like to change? Where did that stem from? How old were you when you first received those messages? What has it been like for you to live under that crushing weight of not liking the way you feel? And then what do you want to think, feel, and experience instead?
Cool. I love that. That's super powerful. And I know personally from having done that work that it is, yeah, incredibly powerful work to do to work through your own money stories and understand your relationships with money. I found for me, like when I did that process, it was a lot of meditating and journaling and thinking back to my childhood and really like seeing how I felt about the stories that were told to me as a child and seeing how they'd carried through to my adult life. It was really interesting to see the things that came up and the feelings that were there with them and to see, like, I think there was a part of me that was like, oh, I know that a lot of this isn't true, but it was so ingrained at this like deep, deep level that I hadn't even been aware of.
So ingrained. And oftentimes it's multi-generational. You know, I think, you know, just to take a lot of the yoke of shame and fear off, it's really important to understand that you didn't wake up one day and invent all of this stuff. There are layers and layers of layers from your family of origin to the regional geographic area that you grew up in to the culture that you're a part of. And then, you know, how has the last 200 years of civilization impacted all of that? It goes in different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's probably so much in our like ancestral history that we just don't know about. I mean, you know, I feel like most people don't think about like asking your grandparents or your great grandparents, like, hey, you know, what did your dad teach you about money? And what did you, you know, teach my dad about that as a part of understanding who we are? Yet, you know, that could be an important part of that process, maybe.
It's an incredibly important part of the process. We don't exist in vacuums. You know, we're subject to our environments and our cultures and our families in huge ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And so before we wrap up, I was just curious if you could tell me a little bit more about Journey, you know, what the program is like, if anyone is curious about maybe applying for it or taking the program, you know, what are all the details they need to know about that?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, Journey is a collective of coaches. Once you come in to become part of the program through our coach training, you are part of our community and you have access to all of the things that we wished existed when we were starting out. That's John and I. So we learned that obviously evidence-based graduate level training is a must. So that's what we offer. It's a 20-week certification program. When you come in, you're part of a cohort of 20 to 25 other folks, like-minded individuals, and we have a dedicated staff member, Coach Pam, whose entire job is holding space for students, fostering connection, asking questions, and really building that community from the inside out. Once you go through the coach training program, I talked about, you know, it's important to understand to what you're doing and then to practice it. And then what I saw happen year after year was we were graduating all of these really incredible people and then everybody was freaking out when they were done. And I was like, okay, what do you guys need? So we set about building our platform, which is just for our alumni to play on and get their training wheels. So things that are really hard to figure out for a lot of people is online hosting, billing, blogging, a website, social media. We offer all of that in our platform to our graduates so they can do social media takeovers, start blogging, host their profiles on our website, and practice becoming good coaches and not worrying about all of the other stuff until they're ready to launch their own brands. And then the larger umbrella is the community itself that supports everybody. So if you have a question, no matter where you are in your journey of building your brand and building your business, you know, hey, I think I want to start writing for Elephant Journal. Does anybody know the editor? Or hey, I really want to run a retreat in Costa Rica. Who's been there? Who can point me in the right direction? Or, you know, how do I hire a virtual assistant? What does it mean? How does it work? Someone who has come before you will be there to cheer you on and answer your questions. And that aspect of the networking that's implicit in our community is where the value is. It's 500, 600, 700 coaches who all are there together.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like there's nothing quite like being able to like be a part of a like-minded community. I mean, that in and of itself is like basically worth paying for. And it's interesting. I was talking to a really good friend of mine who's also a yoga teacher, and she's been starting her yoga business over the last year. And she was talking about how she's been a part of a group coaching program. And she's like, honestly, she's like, sometimes I just feel like I'm paying for friends that actually like understand who I am and what I'm going through.
Yeah. And our community is so family oriented. One of our coaches had put out an open call for anyone in our org to join her at her place over the holidays. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that's just like such a special touching thing and something that's so meaningful, especially like I travel almost full time. So I don't usually spend Christmas with my family. So I feel like that's something that would be really meaningful to me, you know, is to have somebody who can be like family during the holiday season.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think, you know, looking at the, you know, really living the mission of the holistic nature of the wellness community is your real life bleeds into your work. There are some days where, you know, I suffered a lot of losses this year. I lost 6 people in my life. And there were days when the weight of grief was just too heavy. And I turned to my community and said, hey, guys, I'm not okay. And yet the work must go on. And so then the support that came in on the other side of that was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so great that you had that support. And I'm sorry for your losses, 6 losses in a year. That's tough.
It was a rough year.
2020 will hopefully be better.
Yeah.
Amazing. Is there anything else you want to share before we wrap up today, Noelle?
Yeah. You know, I think the number one message that I have is that this field is wide open. And a lot of times when people start checking it out, they feel like the space is crowded, that everyone's coaching, that there's not space for me. And that is not true at all. There is so much room at the table. We need bright, compassionate minds to come into this field, to develop their niches, to do the research, to stand alongside of folks like me who never thought that they could go this far in a million years, and to lend their minds to the genius space that they have not yet discovered for themselves. So if you're thinking about this and there's something inside of you that's being pulled to service, check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Amazing. I love it. And if people want to learn more about you or Journey, where can they go to find you online?
Absolutely. So Journey is JRNI. And we have a special offer for your podcast listeners. So JRNI.co/podcast will get you a free guide that I wrote myself on how to become a life coach and a special discount for our program. And of course, through journey.co, JRNI.co, you'll be able to find me and our program and our awesome community.
Amazing. Thank you so much for the guide and also for your time today. This has been a really awesome conversation. You're definitely the first like life coach I've had on the podcast. So really cool to pick your brain about this a little bit more and hear more about this industry that is super, super inspiring. So thank you.
It's been so much fun. And thank you for having me. I'm delighted to promote the field.
All right. Thanks so much for listening to that episode of the podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it. Just a quick reminder to come on over to the private Facebook community so we can talk about it a little bit more. I'll be going live this Wednesday to chat about it. So it's Yoga Business Badasses on Facebook. Of course, you can find all the notes and all that good stuff from this episode on the show notes page. So head on over to www.mbomyoga.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, shoot me an email at info@mbomyoga.com. And as always, thank you so, so much for listening and for being a part of this community. All right, I'll see you next week. Namaste.